welcome in to the Email Design Podcast, where we talk about all things email. And I am one of your hosts for today, Kevin Mandeville, and I'm happy to welcome in a guest host for today, our very own research director here at Litmus, Mr. Chad White. Chad.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really excited to be here today. And we're actually going to dive into some questions from the Litmus community today on the podcast. So Litmus community is a great place to ask anything email related, and we're going to feature some of the top sort of questions from the community recently. I'd like to start off today with a question from James White, and he asked a question about Outlook.com and Office 365 migration. So he was wondering, is it safe to say that the migration of Outlook.com and Office 365 is mostly complete now? So moving from the old rendering engine that those two clients use to now they have a newer rendering engine under the hood. And the main reason he wanted to ask about this is because he has some old email boilerplate code for things like external class or read message body that sort of targeted these clients for fixes. And he wanted to know, are these now done? What's the status of the migration? Because if so, I'd like to clean up my code. And I'm happy to say we've actually talked with Microsoft about this through our partnership, and 99% of accounts, over 99% even, are fully migrated over to the new rendering. There might be a few other accounts that they still need to transition over, but that is less than 1% of accounts right now. So the majority of accounts are finally transferred over to the new Outlook clients, Chad, which is just going to make things more sane for every single email developer's life out there.
Yeah, you think it's good news when you hear about these migrations, and there definitely is a big trend towards simplification where you have, you know, the big email client owners like Microsoft and Google, they're narrowing down and consolidating the number of rendering engines that they have. But these migrations do not happen instantaneously, and we're definitely seeing that with Gmail right now as they adopt media queries. Some environments support it, other ones don't, but they're all kind of in the Gmail family. So it creates sort of a long, rocky transition. I know we get the question a ton here at Litmus where people say, hey, the preview, that you're showing me, Litmus, is different from the one that I have on my device or in my account. Yeah. And, it calls everything into question, but it's because these migrations don't always happen instantly. And, they're not complete in every sort of permutation of what's possible out there. We know the rendering environment is really messy, and this is another instance where it gets a little messier.
Yeah, so I say it's, I wouldn't necessarily worry about those few accounts. They're just sort of wrapping it up, and we're going to have less fragmentation, and sort of we can move on from all of those old hacks, which is just great news.
All right, the next question we have from community is from Mike Randazzo. He's asking, what are you doing to future-proof your career in email marketing? It's a little bit of a hand-wringing about, the future of email and, what should we be doing as email marketers to make sure that we stay relevant throughout all these changes. And it's a really great question. I think the first thing I would say is that email is super stable in terms of existing as a channel. We did a survey of over 1,000 consumers last year around this time, and we asked them about a ton of channels from cable TV to mail to Facebook to Pinterest. So a bunch of sort of digital channels and not so digital channels, and people were the most bullish about email still existing in 10 years. It got the highest sort of confidence rating of all the channels that we asked about. So I think it's pretty safe to say that that investing in a career in email is a very smart thing to do. However, I think sort of the broader question is, how can we kind of cope with all the changes? And, you know, it suggested that, you know, some of the people on that that thread suggested sort of like getting some web skills. And I think that's really smart. I think the thing that's really big is sort of just to acknowledge that increasingly email doesn't exist on its own as a channel, that it has to integrate with other channels. It has to integrate with other data sources. So I think, you know, getting really good at understanding data and those inputs that can really help define audiences, that can help define dynamic content, that can help define segmentation, that can help define, you know, all these sort of AI-driven suggestions. Those are, I think those are really great skills to have, but I think also understanding just how all the other channels work and what the possible synergies are between email and social and email and, you know, Facebook and different, you know, targeting that you can do to help bring in new subscribers and even old school stuff like how to integrate, you know, your email program with direct mail. I think all these are really handy skills, but I think I personally would point people towards, you know, understanding omnichannel and understanding data.
Yeah, those are great points. Definitely on the data side too. It's always a question of, we almost have too much data now, right? And it's who can actually decipher all of this data and analytics and actually turn it into actionable insight. And I also think it's a great point you brought up about how stable email has been. And yeah, I think people need to understand just how successful email is as a channel, right? It just constantly produces the best results. So people shouldn't necessarily be worried about that from, I think when you take a look at all these other different media, I wouldn't necessarily be worried about email and its performance. And yeah, this is a hot topic for a lot of people. And I know at least I'm looking at it more from a design and development perspective. I think if you're an email designer and developer who's actually building the emails, like you mentioned before, you definitely need to make sure you're staying on top of your skills and trying to borrow as much from the web as you can, because all of these new HTML and CSS standards, they might not exist in email today, but they are coming. Support is improving, like we've seen with Gmail this year. So you need to prepare for that. And I would also just say, embrace email, because it's not going anywhere. And I've always been surprised that more companies haven't dedicated more sort of money and resources into email based on how successful it is as a channel. I personally envision a future where there's actually designers and developers on a single team for email that have different functions. Like right now you see designers on web teams who focus on interaction itself in the process, or you see developers who are only focused on the actual code bit. We don't see a lot of teams like that right now for email marketing, but I think that's coming in the future.
Yeah, email is definitely getting more complicated. You know, people think of email as being sort of an old channel, but it's constantly evolved, and that evolution has brought, you know, sort of more and more complexity to things. You're seeing more specialization. But I think one thing that people kind of underappreciate about email is the fact that it's an open platform. Nobody owns email. You know, compare that to Facebook. You know, you think about what happened to MySpace, all those people that invested a ton of time in MySpace, like now it's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. A little bit of the hand-wringing that's going on with Twitter right now, where everyone's sort of doubting Twitter's future. You know, all that time spent on Twitter could potentially, you know, be kind of sunk because Twitter is a single entity and that single entity can go away. Gmail can go away. AOL can go away, Yahoo Mail can go away, and it doesn't matter. Email is going to keep on ticking, and we see more and more ways of accessing email. One of the things that I'm kind of excited about is all the attention that the Amazon Echo is getting and the Google Home, the sort of voice interface. The Echo is now being integrated into Ford vehicles. So I think it's only a matter of time before we'll be able to sort of interact with our email via voice. Via yes. Things like the Amazon Echo in our car and wherever the heck we might be. So I think there's going to be, because email is an open platform, there's going to be more and more ways to access it, and nobody owns it. So any single failure doesn't do anything to the underlying platform. That's what makes email, I think, so amazing. And that's what gives it all the reach that it has. So it gives it tremendous stability, even though we're constantly seeing sort of innovations and changes on top of that. But the core is still the same.
That's a great point. You ever see the movie Her at all?
I love that movie. And and that's totally how I envision like the kinds of conversations we're going to have. Email is going to get smarter. You know, all the AI work that they're doing right now, that sort of conversational stuff that they're working on. Like, I don't know how far in the future that's going to be where we start having, you know, really kind of conversations like that. But I think we're definitely going to be able to, like, the, you know, AI and voice, those two things together are going to really open up the kinds of things we can do without being in front of a touchscreen or a keyboard. So yeah, that's a great movie to see if you want to kind of see where things might go on the voice end of things.
Yeah, you got to watch that movie if you haven't. It was a fantastic movie. We're going to take a quick break right here. Coming out of the break, we're going to talk about view online links and image-based emails, which are going to be some good topics to talk about. But we just want to let you know you can catch the podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. We have a full archive, every podcast we've ever done, along with full show notes and links. So everything we discuss, all the community discussions we're talking about today are going to be all there. You can subscribe to the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube, so you can get the podcast as it drops. You can tweet along with the hashtag email design podcast. And we have a great 14-day free trial of Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast. So make sure you check what your email looks like in over 70 different email clients now we're up to before you send. Make sure everything's working. It looks good, so you have no rendering issues. You can check your images, your links, your tracking. Make sure nothing's broken in the email so that when it comes time to hit the send button, you don't have any fear doing that. You know, you tested, everything's bulletproof, you use Litmus, and your email's ready to go out the door. So again, just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast for a 14-day free trial.
All right, our next question in the community is from Ted Goas, who's asking, do we still need view this email as a web page links in our emails? And this is a great question. I remember, back in like 2008, talking about this and how this was really kind of a best practice to have this link in there, that was a smart practice and really kind of necessary. I don't think that's the case any longer, personally, and adoption is certainly really low in terms of like the number of brands that are including these kinds of links. I think in many ways, that pre-header text call to action has replaced this. Emails in general have gotten simpler. They have fewer calls to action. And so having some pre-header text that says what that email is about and then has a link at the end of that pre-header text, I feel like in many ways that's really replaced this link. Maybe not in every instance, but I do feel that that's been the thing that sort of replaced this. And frankly, in a lot of cases, people are doing neither. They're not having a view as web page link, and they're not doing pre-header text either. I mean, in terms of like visible pre-header text in the email.
Right. So I actually think that it's a really good best practice to include. The placement of it, I think, is totally up to you. I don't think that a view online link needs to be at the very top of the email anymore. As you said, there's probably better ways to create an experience at the top, and sometimes that's just taking up its place. But I think it serves a couple of core purposes. Number one, I think, he says, is there any benefit, even if it renders well in all email clients? But the reality is that your email is probably broken somewhere. So being able to include a method to access the email, even if it's not inside the inbox, I think it can help sort of avoid rendering issues if people have a really bad client or they just want an enhanced type of experience. Number two, I think that it can actually be helpful, and this would really depend on your audience, but it can be helpful for accessibility potentially if you are able to use the browser sort of to navigate through things as opposed to just being inside the inbox. It sort of depends on your audience, and it might be depending on how you actually coded your email and structured it, but I think there could be a potential benefit there. And then I think probably more so just from us email geeks, but being able to provide a way to just share the email socially and be able to provide an easy way for people to look under the hood and inspect the code of the email. Obviously, it's easy to inspect if you're in a webmail, but if you're in a desktop app or a mobile app or something, it might not be easy to do that. So I think there are just, I think as a best practice, you should include it, even if it's at the very bottom of in your footer somewhere. I don't think there's any harm to including it. I think there are use cases that can really be helpful if you expose it in that way. So whenever I see an email, I always like to see that there's a way to access it at least as a web page somehow.
Yeah, I've definitely seen some of those link migrate to the bottom, but I felt like that was really kind of defeating the purpose, because if you open it and you're having serious problems, like the last thing they're probably going to do is go searching for that link, which admittedly is awesome for email marketers to be able to find that and get at that. But I feel like that's probably not the reason why people would make that decision.
Yeah, for that use case, you're right. It would have to be sort of towards the top for that use case to have a lot of value.
Yeah. So I again, based on what I'm seeing, among all of the brands that I track via email, I've seen it largely go away. But I know that this is sort of a lingering question, sort of a little bit of hand-wringing over what to do with it. But I think in many cases, people have realized that top of email real estate is so incredibly valuable that using that space for these kinds of administrative links that address, a small percentage of subscribers that might potentially have problems. The scenarios are too slim to be able to dedicate that space to it. So I think that's one of those things where we kind of, we have to kind of be at peace with, maybe not giving that optimal experience to a small percentage of subscribers while improving the experience for everybody else. And it's one of these balances.
Yeah, that's a great point. You do need justification for it, right? And it always comes back to who's your audience and who's opening where and what all those factors into the consideration of justifying whether you do this or not, or even where you place it.
And you can certainly get some analytics on that, right? You can do some tests. You can add that link in and see how many times it gets clicked. Try it at the top, try it at the bottom. My guess is that if you were to put it at the bottom, you'd see it clicked almost never. It would be super low, which would, maybe you leave it there because, it doesn't like hurt you too much to have it there. But, it seems extraneous to me, but you can certainly do a test to see if your particular audience responds to it.
That's great advice. We do that constantly, but I know us for Litmus, we at least are always going to keep that view online, at least at the bottom for all of our emails based on our email geekery audience for sure.
That's right. See, we have to know your audience. Yes. And like that's something we know that our audience will appreciate. So there's definitely a use case for us to include that. I think for everybody else, it's a tough sell. But yeah, A-B test, that's always the answer. If you have a doubt, A-B test, this is a really simple thing to A-B test. And you can see what kind of response you get.
That's awesome. So I want to move on and talk about this. This is a great topic here. This is a good question from Nick Waite in the community. He asked, what's so bad about image-based emails? And he says that he tries to avoid image-based emails like a plague, but it's something who not many people in his company really understand the limitations around email and ESPs. And he has to sort of make a case as to why it's a bad practice to have image-based emails in the first place. And so he wanted to basically sort of ask, what's a list of why these are so bad? Some of the points that he came up with on his own was that text on images won't be as clear and crisp as actual HTML. ESPs won't really know the content and may be marked as spam. Because there's no actual text, there will not be a text version of the email. And not every ESP renders stacked images correctly, and so you have responsive issues there. So a couple of those points, you could still have a text version even without, or even if you did have an image-based email. Those are sort of separate considerations. But I would say the number one big thing here is just accessibility, right? You want to be able to use live text, actual HTML text. That's just going to improve the experience for everybody. It's going to, as he mentioned, have nice retina rendering that's going to be looking well across all the different devices when you use live text. There's the issue of responsive design, as he mentioned as well. If you're trying to accommodate for a large mobile audience, when you're just using images to be responsive, whether that means you're compressing them down for mobile or scaling them up for desktop, not ideal. You're making a trade-off in one of those environments. Another big thing he doesn't mention actually is this would have a dramatic increase on performance. So that would mean if you're using all images, it would be a larger email, larger file sizes, and users would have to download that. Your email would be slower to download and interact with. So that's a big consideration as well. And another big thing, not many people optimize for images off view. So there's a lot more to take care of for an images off view when your entire email is images off. I remember, Chad, one of my favorite examples, and I don't subscribe to them anymore, but I used to subscribe to some Fast Company emails, and they used to just send the email as one big image. And it's like, well, that solves email rendering, right? But they didn't even have alt text on the image. So literally the only text you could see in the email was the unsubscribe text at the bottom, which was hysterical. And that's not the experience you want to give users. So again, and you have to dedicate more time to sort of investing in that, which isn't necessarily the ideal way you want users to be interacting with the majority of your email. So I would say those are sort of the core considerations about why image-based emails are bad from my perspective. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we could talk for like easily an hour on this topic. This is such a point of like contention and like people who have really strong views. I do think there's a little bit of like image hating going on, which I think is probably not warranted. I think one of the things we should really think of is that some things can only be communicated well in images. Certainly if you're selling any kind of tangible product, you need images. If you're selling any kind of experience, think about travel, you need images. Images can do amazing, amazing things for you. So we shouldn't hate on images too hard. I think the tricky thing is there seems to be this school of thought that it's one or the other, that you're either one giant image or you're like all live text. And the reality is that the best experiences tend to fall in between. And you talked about how if you don't have very much text in your HTML email, you can have a lot of text in your plain text part of your email. Like you can definitely edit that, even if your ESP is sort of auto-populating that based on the HTML text that's in your HTML part of your email. You can definitely go in there and edit that, and you can change that, and you make that a really great experience. Nick talks about ESPs, but I have a sneaking suspicion that in many cases he meant ISPs. ISPs do care a little bit about that text to image ratio, not nearly as much as they used to. They used to really care about it because images were a common way of sort of hiding the content of your email. But that's not really the case so much anymore. But it is a consideration, and you definitely want to make sure that you're using a good plain text part of your email. You definitely want to make sure that you're using alt text for any images that you have. You do want to make sure that you're using HTML text where it makes sense. So pre-headers, all of the administrative text at the bottom of your email in the footer, your unsubscribe link, which everybody knows needs to be live text, can't be any kind of silly button. I think where people struggle, where brands struggle, is that many brands don't acknowledge that their brand guidelines need to change for the email medium. They want to have, you know, their super specialized, you know, unique font. They want to use that. And in order to use that special font, you know, they have to embed that text inside of an image. They've got to get over that because in many, many cases, you know, the differences between those fonts and the standard fonts that are available and widely supported are very small. You know, so maybe there are cases where you use a special font for like for a headline or some kind of supporting text, but then you have the rest of the text in a system font. So there's compromises that you need to make. Some brands are not on board with acknowledging that they need to make that sort of that trade-off, you know, sort of sacrificing some of that brand image a little bit to make sure they're providing a good subscriber experience. But images are incredibly valuable. So I don't like when we start like saying like, oh, should I do one big image versus, an HTML email or a lot of text? It's in between. So we need to make sure that we're acknowledging, where images can be really powerful and the smart ways that we need to use text in terms of, the plain text version, alt text, and smart use of HTML text in that email to help balance things out and give a great experience when images are off and to make sure that we're making all the ISPs happy for the ones that are perseverating over, that text image ratio, which again is much, much, much less of an issue now than it was, say, 10 years ago when it was a really big deal.
And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said when it's text, use text for the most part, right? There's obviously going to be some graphical components. Maybe you need to, but I think that's really the number one rule of thumb, sort of best practice to live by is if you're using text, it should most likely be text. Brands sort of need to get over this whole, their font needs to look like it. I know Apple is like one of the worst offenders of that in my mind. It's like, come on, guys, you can live without your brand font. That's a progressive enhancement.
It's tough. It's tough because, marketing, like CMOs, like they live brand. They need to live, customer experience. That's what they need to really embrace. And with an email, that means giving that subscriber the best experience they can have. And to do that, you need to make some compromises. So, there's definitely a church of brand, and we need to like change to like church of the customer, and make sure that we're kind of serving them the best we can, and making smart sacrifices and trade-offs where we need to.
Preach.
All right. So the next topic on our lineup, and our last topic is Daniel Riggs is asking, how important are above the fold buttons? My take on this is that there definitely was a school of thought for a while that you need to get all your key CTAs, your key call to actions above the fold to have an effective email. For those people who are just going to glance at it, you need to give them opportunity. I think that many marketers have realized that that's not always the case. A lot of times we see like a lot of design being kind of top heavy, being squunched, and that's and that doesn't make for a great experience for subscribers. It makes the messaging look clunky and cluttered. I think that where people have come around to is that you want to have calls to action that are up high, but you also want to make sure that call to action is supported. So you have to have the proper messaging ahead of that CTA to convince people to click through. And sometimes that messaging can be really short depending on what kind of message it is. But if you're trying to convince someone of something that maybe they're not predisposed to, or you haven't talked to them about in previous emails, sometimes you need quite a bit of messaging to get them through that kind of consideration, to build that intent. So that they're going to want to click through. So sometimes you can really kind of shoot yourself on the foot by putting up a CTA that's not supported by the messaging yet. So having a lower CTA in some cases is really appropriate and can be more effective.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think the tough thing about the Fold nowadays is that it's very subjective in the fact that there's literally thousands of different devices, right? So you can't ever really accommodate for that true fold on every single type of device size or client size or viewport size, depending on how people have the email set up. So it's tough, especially, you know, as a designer speaking or trying to take into account design considerations, it's hard to always accommodate for that. And I think it is important. I mean, there's obviously the just things at the bottom of the email are going to be less clicked on, less interacted with than things at the top. So, I mean, for the important things, like you said, as long as you have that supportive messaging and copy and content, you want to have the focal point, the key actions that you want to take, I mean, as early as you can be. You want, and that really falls back, I think, a lot to the strategy. You want things to be concise. But yeah, in terms of there being sort of an actual fold, or if there's data around this, as he asked, I think it's tough because it's becoming more and more fragmented over what the fold actually is. Are you aware of any sort of data or research around this type of behavior, whether it be clicks or scrolling, as it relates to email and the fold, as we may call it?
Yeah, not off the top of my head, but I mean, you're right. There's no one fold. There's 1,000 folds, across all these different environments. And I think maybe what I would encourage people to think of is not about, do I need that CTA to be above the fold? I think the better question is, are you using the above the fold space efficiently and wisely? I think that's the main thing. So sometimes so for instance, Guilt Group has really long subject lines. And when they display on the iPhone in the native mail app, it occupies like kind of half of the viewport, that subject line. So you've now shoved down all the content that's inside sort of the body of the email. Yeah. I think those are the kinds of like issues to kind of be aware of. Now, Guilt Group like kind of uses that long subject line kind of like as part of their branding to be recognized in the inbox. So I think that's a little bit of their strategy there. But I think these are the kinds of things to think about is, am I using, you know, that above the fold space smartly? And if I'm wasting space, you know, we talked about, including administrative links and things like that, you know, in that pre-header space, you know, am I using that space efficiently? Are things kind of the appropriate size to be interacted with, but not to, you know, create too much white space where you're pushing messaging down? I think that's really the better question, because if you're worried about whether or not people are going to scroll, they will scroll. If you give them reason to scroll, if you engage them with messaging or images or what have you, they will absolutely scroll. It is so easy to scroll now. So I don't feel like that's the impediment, but I think, you know, you need to use that space wisely, but I don't think it matters if there's a CTA above the fold. I wouldn't say that's a best practice.
That's a good takeaway.
Up to debate.
That's a good takeaway. It's not about necessarily the placement, but the efficiency of the space that you're using. That's a great way to approach the problem. Well, Chad, this has been fun, man. Thanks for joining in on the podcast for your first time. We definitely hope to have you back. I hope you had fun. I hope this wasn't too daunting for you.
No, I had a great time. Yeah. It was great chatting with you and talking to everybody else.
Yeah, you're a natural, and I didn't mention this at the beginning, but yeah, Jason's sick this week, so that's why no Jason this week. Jason didn't go anywhere, so nobody worry for all the Jason fans out there.
I hope I did Jason proud standing in for him.
Yeah, so but we'll definitely have you back on the podcast, definitely to talk more about some of your interesting research that you're up to nowadays here at Litmus, which there's a ton of good stuff. So we'll definitely plan to have you back. Again, just a reminder, you can catch the podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. Full show notes, links, and archives all right there. You can subscribe to the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Tweet along with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. And don't forget, there's a great 14-day free trial of Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/giftcard and input the coupon code podcast. All right, email geeks, see you next time. We'll